106.6.
That was the Human League with Don't You Want Me, and you're on 106.6, live from North Manchester. And this is the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. This is a weekly show where I look through the week's new releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has relatively recently had a revamp, so do take a look. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, please get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow, and everything that I mentioned on here, there's like lots of trailers for films and stuff like that on the page as well, so just go and have a look. Also, I'm going to give another mention to the fact that I make some mashup videos. I post them on YouTube, but just go to the YouTube channel Dom Says XL, that's D-O-M-S-E-Z, XL. Last week, one of mine was on RudeTube on Channel 4. Video is one of my snooker mashups, which I'm just going to refer to as Snooker Loopy. I probably can't give the full title out at this time of day, as you'll see when you look at it, but or you can just search on there for Snooker RudeTube and you'll find it. Or you can see the whole... I mean, the video itself goes on for about 2.5 minutes, but on the clip it was about 20 seconds, but the program's still up on channel4.com/4OD. Anyway, in this first hour, we'll be looking at all things to do with film, starting off with a review of a DVD called As If I Am Not There. Then we're going to have the top 10 movie charts, the look at the new cinema releases, including Drive and Killer Elite, some new DVD releases, including Glee Season 2, oh joy, and Attack the Block, and then some film news. So I'm going to start off with As If I'm Not There, which it actually comes out next Monday on DVD. But anyway, As If I'm Not There presents us with Samira Natasha Petrovic, a part-time teacher from Sarajevo, who decides to make the break from home and set out and spend a couple of months in Bosnia, taking the place of another who's gone off sick, although the kids tell her that their teacher is not coming back. This is the time of the Balkan Wars, which took place in the former Yugoslavia between 1991 and 95. No sooner has she begun to settle in, than when some soldiers move into the village and one tells her to pack up her things. The fact she's a temporary teacher and just there for a couple of months has no bearing on proceedings at all. They're told they have orders to take them all out of the village and that it's for their own good. The men are told to move out first, and as the camera stays focused on the women, gunfire is heard. A bus ride later and they're locked in a warehouse in the middle of nowhere with no light, no knowledge about what will happen next. And then the next morning, as the women are escorted out into the field and told to urinate. As the ordeal continues early in the film, she sees women and children taken out into nearby abandoned buildings, presumably, you know. And then one day she's called out herself and is taken to the building where three disgusting drunken men tell her to undress. What follows is too gross for words. And the way she feels? Well, therein lies the title, As If I'm Not There. In fact, it's probably the most grim movie you'll see all year in so many ways. The film follows Samira's journey with Natasha Petrovic putting on a standout performance as Samira, with good support from the rest of the cast. It was based on Croatian writer Slavenia Draculic's real-life experiences overseeing the proceedings of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia at The Hague. I was also pleased to see Stellan Skarsgård in the cast, although he only turns up for a few minutes as a doctor, and that's that. Overall, this is certainly an important film to watch, but I have to say that it does need tightening up at times and can drag when the subject matter doesn't deserve that. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in widescreen. The picture is a little soft. It's very well filmed though, with great use of cinematography. Meanwhile, the sound is in Dolby Digital 5.1 and provides a suitably tense atmosphere to the storyline. The only extra on the disc is just a trailer, which thankfully doesn't give away too much, although it can't given the strength of the content in the film. However, why is that the only extra on here? Aren't there any interviews with the cast and director, for example? Anyway, as I say, the film's out next week on DVD. So the film I'd give 7 out of 10. Picture, just 7. Sound, 6. The extras, just 1, because it's hardly anything, just a trailer. So overall, that's going to be a 5. Maybe worth a rental, perhaps. But I wouldn't advise buying it straight off. Okay, so that's your film review for this week. So that's As If I'm Not There. You can also see some many more film reviews on just go to dvdfever.co.uk. And in a moment, we'll have a look at the movie charts. But in a moment, we'll be having Bobby Womack and Across 110th Street. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this section, I'm going to have a look at the top 10 movie charts. And I go through the US movie charts here. Well, for months, I couldn't find any of the UK ones. When I did find them on the Rotten Tomatoes website, they were a week out of date, which is no good. So here we go. In at number one, we've got The Lion King 3D, which has taken $29.3 million in its first week. A young lion prince is born in Africa, thus making his uncle Scar the second in line to the throne. Scar plots with the hyenas to kill King Mufasa and Prince Simba, thus making himself king. The king is killed, and Simba is led to believe that by Scar that it was his fault, and so flees the kingdom in shame. After years in exile, he's persuaded to return to home to overthrow the usurper and claim the kingdom as his own, thus completing the circle of life. Well, anyone who's heard this show before will know I don't really go in for animated films and I don't have any kids, so I'm going to be giving this one a miss, just as I have done for the past 17 years. But if you want to see it in 3D, then I think it'll be out soon at the cinema. Number two, which was number one last week, we've got Contagion. Beth Emhoff, Gwyneth Paltrow, goes to Hong Kong on a business trip to participate in a groundbreaking ceremony for a new factory. While in Hong Kong, Beth visits a casino and plays a dice game with colleagues from the plant. Once the ceremony is complete, Beth flies back to her husband, Mitch, Matt Damon, and her son, Clark, Griffin Kane. Later that night, Beth collapses on the floor in what appears to be a seizure. Beth is rushed to a Minneapolis area hospital for treatment and succumbs to an unknown cause. Mitch is informed that his wife has passed away and is asked to come in the next day to give information regarding possible causes of Beth's death. Mitch's only assistance is that Beth complained of jet lag. Clark dies shortly before Mitch returns home. Dr. Elias Cheever, Lawrence Fishburne, of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, manages an investigation into 32 disease-related deaths, all exhibiting similar symptoms. He sends Dr. Erin Mears, Kate Winslet, an epidemic intelligence service officer to Minneapolis to begin the investigation and trace back. Dr. Mears struggles to identify the common aspects of the disease, interviewing almost all of the initial cases and those around them. Now, the trailer for this looks pretty similar to 1995's Outbreak, which itself was a great film, and this one certainly, you know, it looks well worth a watch too, so I'd certainly recommend this. It's coming out in the UK on October 21st. Number three, we've got Drive, which has taken $11 million. There's going to be more about this one in the new releases section. Number four, The Help. Number five, we've got Straw Dogs. It's taken $5 million. And it's written and directed by Rod Lurie. And it's a remake of Sam Peckinpah's 1971 film of the same name, in turn based on the Gordon Williams novel of The Siege of Trench's Farm. Los Angeles screenwriter David Sumner, James Marsden, and his wife Amy, Kate Bosworth, move back to Amy's hometown in the Deep South. Tensions begin to rise due to Amy's former lover, Charlie Venner, Alexander Skarsgård, who rapes Amy after having his friends lure David out into the woods and strand him. When David agrees to help one of the locals, Walton Goggins, whose mentally retarded brother has been falsely accused of rape, the normally pacifist David offer the two sanctuary and prepare to defend their home against Charlie and his friends, who seek to eliminate the people in the house. Now, I've seen the original film on DVD with Dustin Hoffman and Susan George, and despite it being a cult film, it just didn't really work for me. Now, the trailer in this remake also leaves zero impression on me, so I can't recommend it. Number six, we've got I Don't Know How She Does It, which has only taken $4.5 million. By day, Kate Reddy, Sarah Jessica Parker, works for a Boston-based financial management firm. By night, she's a devoted mother of two adoring children and the happily married wife of out-of-work architect Richard, Greg Kinnear. Though balancing those two worlds has its fair share of challenges, Kate generally manages to come out on top thanks to the support of her best friend Alison, Christina Hendricks, who's had plenty of experiences balancing kids and a career. Meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum, Kate's sharp-as-attack junior associate assistant Momo, Olivia Munn, possesses a fear of children and a strong work ethic. Just when Kate lands a lucrative new contract, a new account rather, that will see her travelling across the country on a regular basis, however, a new business associate, Jack Pierce Brosnan, reveals his flirtatious side, and Richard receives a job offer he can't turn down. Though it looks as if Kate and Richard couldn't possibly take on any more responsibility, the demands of modern living will ensure they never have a dull moment if they try. Well, it says here they'll never have a dull moment. I mean, this is the film Sarah Jessica Parker was talking about when she appeared on Jonathan Ross' show the other week. She made it sound really complex. It isn't. Number seven, we've got The Debt. The espionage thriller begins in 1997 as the shocking news reaches retired Mossad agents Rachel, Helen Mirren, and Stephen Tom Wilkinson about their former colleague David, Kieran Hines. All three have been venerated for decades by their country because of the mission they undertook back in 1966 when the trio, portrayed respectively by Jessica Chastain, Martin Sokas, and Sam Worthington, tracked down Nazi war criminal Vogel, Jesper Christensen, in East Berlin. At great risk and at considerable personal cost, the team's mission was accomplished. Or was it? The suspense builds in and across two different time periods, with startling action and surprising revelations. Now, from the trailer, this looks pretty good, especially when it comes to mixing in the two time frames, so it's worth a look when it comes out in the UK at the end of September. Number 8, we've got Warrior, which that's also in the new releases section. Number 9, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And at number 10, we've got Columbiana. That's your top 10 movie charts for this week. So we'll have a look at the cinema releases in a moment. But before that, I'm going to have a bit of music with Gorillaz and Kids with Guns. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now in this section, we're going to be having a look at the new cinema releases out this week, starting off with Warrior. In this film, two brothers face the fight of a lifetime and the wreckage of their broken family within the brutal, high-stakes world of a mixed martial arts, MMA, fighting the action drama Warrior. An ex-Marine haunted by a tragic past, Tommy Riordan returns to his hometown of Pittsburgh and enlists his father, a recovered alcoholic, and his former coach to train him for an MMA tournament, awarding the biggest purse in the history of the sport. As Tommy blazes a violent path towards a title prize, his brother Brendan, a former MMA fighter, unable to make ends meet as a public school teacher, returns to the amateur ring to provide for his family. Even though years have passed, recriminations and past betrayals keep Brendan bitterly estranged from both Tommy and his father. But when Brendan's unlikely rise as an underdog sets him on a collision course with Tommy, the two brothers must finally confront the forces that tore them apart, all the time waging the most intense winner-takes-all battle of their lives. Unfortunately, with this one, the trailer makes it look like 2 hours of life-affirming guff with, oh, we can triumph over every last problem, rather than something worth watching. So I'm definitely going to give this one a miss. Also out on Friday, we've got Crazy Stupid Love. Now, by the way, all the trailers to these are on the Facebook page, so if you want to see them, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. So in Crazy Stupid Love, Cal, Steve Carell, and Emily, Julianne Moore, had the perfect life together, living the American dream, until Emily asked for a divorce. Now Cal, Mr. Husband, has to navigate the single scene with a little help from his professional bachelor friend, Jacob Palmer, Ryan Gosling. Well, not such a little help, make it a lot of help. Also starring Marissa Tomei and Emma Stone from Easy A and Friends with Benefits. Watching the trailer, I got a couple of laughs out of it, but there's nothing in there that would make me want to sit through the entire movie. Also out, we've got Soul Surfer. And it's a new American drama film about the life of surfer Bethany Hamilton. At the age of 13, Hamilton lost her arm to a shark attack. The film details the events surrounding this attack and a struggle during the aftermath. The film is directed by Sean McNamara, who based the screenplay on Hamilton's autobiography of the same name and on the filmmaker's interviews with the family. The title refers to the term coined in the 1960s to denote someone who serves purely for pleasure. But the word soul has a double meaning as a reference to Hamilton's Christian faith, which helped to recover a surfing career after the attack. Anna Sophia Robb stars as Hamilton, and Dennis Quaid and Helen Hunt star as her parents. That's a true story, and the trailer makes it look like a typical Channel 5 afternoon movie of the week about triumph over adversity. Enough said. I'm not going to be going to see this one, to be honest. Also out, we've got Drive. No, just going by the name of Driver. Well, it says driver, Ryan Gosling, who remains unnamed throughout the film, works in Shannon's, Bryan Cranston's, garage. Picks up occasional stunt driving work and moonlights as a getaway driver. At the start of the film, his driving skills and precision are established as he helps two burglars evade the police. A driver always works anonymously, never for the same crooks twice, and makes a point of only allotting them 5 minutes to do their business. Driver becomes involved with his neighbour, Irene, Carey Mulligan, and her young son, Benicio, Caden Leos, when their car breaks down at a grocery store. Driver and Irene appear to be slowly developing a romantic connection when her husband, Standard, Oscar Isaac, comes home from prison. Standard owes protection money to Cook, James Barberi, from his time in prison. Cook beats him for it and threatens to come after Irene and Benicio if Standard does not do a job for them. Concerned for Irene, Driver agrees to help Standard placate Cook by robbing a pawn shop. Also participating in the heist is Blanche Christina Hendricks, a woman associated with Cook. But the job goes fatally wrong as Standard is shot dead by the pawn shop owner, and as Driver and Blanche escape, they are pursued by a mystery car. Ooh. Now, watching the trailer, it looks okay, but I'm not completely sold on it. So it wouldn't be my first choice of films to watch. It just doesn't particularly grab me like a film should. So I'm not going to be giving that one much time, to be honest. Also out, we've got Killer Elite. Now, this film, based on a true story, Killer Elite pits two of the world's most elite operatives, Danny, an ex-Special Ops agent, Jason Statham, and Hunter, his longtime mentor, Robert De Niro, against the cunning leader of a secret military society, played by Clive Owen. Covering the globe from Australia to Paris, London and the Middle East, Danny and Hunter are plunged into a highly dangerous game of cat and mouse, where the predators become the prey. Now, the trailer for this is full of explosions and a rock soundtrack, showing us that it's Jason Statham versus Clive Owen and Robert De Niro, or that's how it appears to be. But it certainly looks like it fills the criteria for an action blockbuster, so this is definitely a film I want to see. So, say the trailers for all those films and everything else you hear on the show today, you'll be able to see on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. That's all your new releases out for this week. So, in a moment, we'll be having a look at the new DVDs out this week. But first of all, a bit of music from Spanky Wilson with Sunshine of Your Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And in this section, I'm going to have a look at some DVDs out this week, starting with Glee Season 2. And this one, the Glee Club's fearless leader is Will Schuster, Matthew Morrison, a talented young teacher with hip-hop skills and a heart of gold. New Direction's aspiring stars include Rachel, Lea Michele, a pitch-perfect singer with an unfaltering determination to be popular, Finn, Corey Monteith, the heartbreakingly cool quarterback who struggles with his personal life, Kurt, Chris Colfer, the baby-faced soprano with a fierce eye for fashion, Mercedes, Amber Riley, a powerful vocalist whose diva attitude rivals the greats, Artie, Kevin McHale, a physically disabled performer with killer vocals and a dream to dance, and Tina, Jenna Ushkowitz, a goth chick with a soft side. It's also arrogant and cocky crooner, care if I say that, Puck, Mark Salling, ice-cold queen bee turned teen mom, Quinn, Diana Argon, and the dynamic, dim-witted cheerleading duo of Brittany, Heather Morris and Santana, Naya Rivera. With his heart in the right place, Will is determined, but if you remember which one Will is out of all that list, Will is determined to help the kids take the nationals, but at every turn he must battle with his nemesis, even Sue Sylvester, Jane Lynch, the conniving cheerleading coach, and his evil ex-wife Terry, Jesselyn Gilsig. Mrs. Schuster's only allies at McKinley are OCD-affected guidance counsellor Emma Pillsbury, Jaima Mays, and supportive parents like Kurt's dad, Bert Hummel, Mike O'Malley. The second season of Glee includes best guest appearances by Britney Spears, Gwyneth Paltrow, heartthrob John Stamos, international pop star Charisse, whoever that is, and newcomer Cord Overstreet. And season two includes all 22 episodes. You can tell I don't watch Glee, and I have no interest in watching this one whatsoever. But there will be some people, well, quite a lot of people, no doubt, who watch Glee. And actually, I have both Blu-ray and DVD. They're also out this week. I've got Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2, Roderick Rules. Greg Heffley, the kid who made Wimpy cool, is back in a side-splitting sequel, it says here, based on the second instalment of the best-selling book series. Having rid himself of the cheese touch, Greg enters the seventh grade with his confidence and friends intact, and an eye on the new girl in town, Holly Hills. But things have gotten out of hand at home, especially with his brother, Roderick, and Greg, about to learn that there may be something even scarier than middle school, his own family. Special features on this disc include several featurettes, deleted scenes, an alternate ending, a gag reel and an audio commentary. Now, this is a kid's film, so it's certainly not something I'm going to watch. Also out, we've got Attack the Block. And it's a fast, funny, frightening action-adventure movie that pits a teen gang against an invasion of savage alien monsters. It turns a London housing estate into a sci-fi playground. A tower block into a fortress under siege, and teenage street kids into heroes. It's inner city versus outer space. Trainee nurse Sam is walking home to a flat in a scary South London tower block when she's robbed by a gang of masked, hooded youths. She's saved when the gang are distracted by a bright meteorite which falls from the sky and hits a nearby parked car. Sam flees just before the gang are attacked by a small alien creature that leaps from the wreckage. The gang chase the creature and kill it, dragging its ghoulish carcass to the top of the block, which they treat as their territory. While Sam and the police hunt for the gang, the second wave of meteors fall. Confident of victory against such feeble invaders, the gang grab weapons, mountain bikes and mopeds, and set out to defend their turf. But this time the creatures are bigger, much bigger, savage, shadowy and bestial. They are hunting their fallen comrade, and nothing will stand in their way. The estate is about to become a battleground. And a bunch of no-hope kids who just attacked Sam are about to become her and the block's only hope. Now, special features on this disc include 3 audio commentaries, some trailers and 6 featurettes. And watching the trailer, the combination of aliens attacking and Nick Frost wisecracking in his usual style just isn't really working for me. He's great when he's alongside Simon Pegg, although I'll exclude Paul from that. But when both of them set off to do separate feature films, there's just something about it which doesn't really feel like something that should happen. Watch Simon Pegg in Star Trek and Mission Impossible 3 and you'll see what I mean. Okay, so that's some of the DVDs out for this week. In a moment we'll be having 1 or 2 more, and also list like a general list of everything else that's out this week. But a bit of music first. Something to my voice today. And it's going to be Ohio Players with Fire, which if you watch Hell's Kitchen USA on ITV2, you'll certainly recognise this because it's the theme tune. Okay, so it's Ohio Players with Fire. This is 106.6. 106.6. Now we're going to look at another film that's out this week. We've got Arthur. Now this fresh new look at a classic story, Russell Brand reinvents the role of lovable billionaire Arthur Back, an irresponsible charmer who has always relied on 2 things to get by: his limitless fortune and the good sense of his lifelong nanny and best friend Hobson, Helen Mirren, to keep him out of trouble. Kind-hearted, fun-loving, and utterly without purpose, Arthur spends every day in heedless pursuit of amusement. But when his unpredictable public image threatens the staid reputation of the family foundation back worldwide, he's given an ultimatum. Marry the beautiful but decidedly unlovable Susan Johnson, Jennifer Garner, an ambitious corporate exec who can keep him in line, or say goodbye to his billion-dollar inheritance and the only way of life he knows. It's a deal Arthur would be inclined to take, except, well, if he hadn't just fallen for Naomi, Greta Gerwig, a New York City tour guide who shares his idealism and spontaneity. The independent Naomi sees Arthur not only for who he is, but for who he could be, and finally gives him a reason to take charge of his own life. All he needs to do is stand up for what he wants, but at what cost? With some unconventional help from Hobson, the one person who always believed he could do anything, Arthur will take the most expensive risk of his life and learn what it means to become a man. The extra content in this includes Arthur Unsupervised, featurette, gag reel and deleted scenes. Now there are a couple of laughs in the trailer, and I'm a massive fan of the original with Dudley Moore and John Gielgud, and I know it's been almost 30 years since that came out. I can't forget how good it was, and no remake's going to do it for me. It's the equivalent of Girls Aloud covering a Pretenders song. It just ends up bland and bland and forgettable. So, definitely not one for me. Some other films out this week. Some main films. We've got Atrocious, Cedar Rapids, Double Impact with Van Damme, which is out on DVD, but I'm sure that's certainly been out before. Gary Moore Live at Montreux, 2010. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo Millennium Trilogy, so you got extended versions of all three films. You got Rambo the Complete Collection on Blu-ray and a special grenade packaging. And also Weekender. Some TV series out this week. We've got Blue Bloods Season 1, Nikita Season 1, The Persuaders, the complete series, Prison Break, complete Season 1 to 4, Twilight Zone Season 4, and The Very British Coup. I'll just rattle through some Blu-ray premieres out this week. We've got The Aviator, Being John Malkovich, Billy Elliot, City of God, The Constant Gardener, Doubt, Emma, the 1996 version, The English Patient, Firefly, the complete series, Good Will Hunting, Hero, one of those films where everyone flies about, Johnny English, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Kill Bill 1 and 2, The Others, The Quiet American, There Will Be Blood, and The Talented Mr. Ripley. Oh, and also United 93, which I would have thought would have made sense to put it out a couple of weeks ago, to be honest. Okay, so that's all your film releases out this week, all the DVD releases and Blu-rays, rather. In a moment, we'll be having some film news, but first of all, a bit of music from OMD with Maid of Orleans. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And back on 106.6, live from North Manchester, and it's a DVD Fever show with me, Dom Robinson. And just before we have a bit of the film news, we've got Aaron Metta here, who's going to tell us about his show at 2 o'clock.
Hello, Dom. How are you doing?
Not too bad, you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well.
Good, good. What's on your show today, then?
Today, for local news, we're going to be talking about the Liberal Democrat conference taking place in Birmingham, and seeing currently at the moment, last time I checked, Chris Hume had taken the stand and was talking about climate change, and obviously Vince Cable's been talking about the economy, and Nick Clegg's been talking to delegates as well regarding his place in the coalition government, and also various other things as well. Also on Newsnight, Jeremy Paxman got a bit of a grilling from a lot of Liberal Democrat supporters, and he did look very very foolish in that place. I think someone in production wanted to pay him back for something. And then in worldwide politics, the Palestinian statehood debate goes to the UN General Assembly. They're applying for a UN member status, so there's a likelihood they're not going to get it because of the American veto, but if that's not a possibility, then there is also the possibility of non-UN status. So we're going to look at the ins and outs of all the things today.
That's good. Is anyone going to ask Chris Hume why on this climate change thing, why it's just gone absolutely freezing outside, like November?
There's all sorts of things to this, and I think I'm sure there's plenty of climate change scientists that can probably explain it a bit better than I can. So I don't claim to be anyone like that.
Nice one. Just before we're going to take us to the top of the hour, we're going to go up with a bit of film news. You ready for a bit of film news, Aaron?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've got director Eduardo Sanchez, who's talking about A Blair Witch 3. Eduardo Sanchez, who directed the original Blair Witch Project with Daniel Myrick, has spoken about the possibility of returning with a third film in the series. In a chat, Sanchez gave an update on the status of the film, saying, "It's completely up to Lionsgate. Dan and I are ready to do it. We've been toying around with a sequel idea that we really like. Just a matter of getting our schedules in line and having Lionsgate sign off on the idea. We've been ready to do a Blair Witch movie for a long time. We're as close as we've ever been to making it happen, but it's still not a guaranteed thing." He also made it clear that the third installment would categorically ignore the risible sequel. "I actually like the sequel, but at the time it exists in a world outside the movie. So if we want to do a sequel, the Blair Witch Project, we have to stay in that world." This is him saying this, by the way, which Book of Shadows didn't. Book of Shadows created a different world. It's like the sequel to Jaws started with shots of people lined up to see Jaws. It was like if the sequel to Jaws started with shots of people lined up to see Jaws in the movie theatre. For Book of Shadows, it works in a certain way, but for me, my biggest gripe with Artisans is that you shouldn't have called it Blair Witch 2. It would have been fine to call it Blair Witch Chronicles, which there wasn't really a sequel to our movie. So part 3 would be a direct sequel in our film to our film living in that mythology of Burkitt's film, being possessed, haunted by something. He also added a couple more interesting nuggets of intrigue, claiming, "Right now the idea has no person in it, no first person in it at all, but we'll see. There's always room for new ideas to come in." Sanchez also added that the three main actors stroke characters are expected to return, stating, "The plan is to have them back. They're probably not going to be the main characters, but they're definitely characters in the sequel." It's hard to imagine a generally decent Blair Witch sequel, not only because Book of Shadows was so dire, but mainly because any extension of the story risks destroying the authentic chills and mystery of the original. I've not seen the sequel. Did you see the... I saw the original.
I am familiar with the original Blair Witch, but I'm very surprised that they can make sequels to it, to be honest with you. It's like, I always thought that the concept of what it was, I thought, okay, this is going to be one of those one-shot movies, really, and I thought, I'm very very surprised that they could probably garner any more ideas of it. It kind of makes me feel a bit more afraid as well, because basically, once you take an idea like that and you say, oh, well, we can make a sequel to this, there's always the likelihood that it's not actually going to be very good. So it's like, you know, I'm skeptical about whether this next, you know, this next movie could possibly be any better than the other ones that have pre-existed.
Yeah, I saw the original. It didn't work for me, to be honest. It's the kind of thing they just seem to make. They built up the hype too much, and it just, I don't know, seemed to fall apart for me. So the news we've got: how Brad Pitt fought to keep Gwyneth's head in the box in Seven. So I hope you've seen Seven, even though it came out about 15 years ago. Otherwise, it's going to spoil it for you. During a chat with Entertainment Weekly, Brad Pitt opens up about a particularly frustrating experience early in his career, when his favourite scene in Legends of the Fall was cut after a studio determined that it elicited the most negative response from the audiences. "Guys, this is exactly why we're here," Pitt remembers. "We want to evoke emotion, not favourable opinion, not agreement." Pitt claims that he had no juice and couldn't do anything about the change, but he made sure not to let the same thing happen on his next film, the extra-edgy David Fincher film, Seven. "With Seven, I said, I'll do it on one condition: the head stays in the box. Put it in the contract that the head stays in the box." Actually, there was a second thing, too. "He's got to shoot the killer in the end. He doesn't do the right thing. He does the thing of passion. Those two things are in the contract." Cut to Seven has been put together, and they've tested it, and they go, "Yeah, it'd be so much more heroic if he didn't shoot John Doe, and it's too unsettling with the head in the box. We think maybe if it was the dog's head in the box." Well, I really enjoyed Seven. I think it was one of the best films at the time.
I was going to say, I never really had a chance to see it, but, you know, I think...
I've spoiled it for you.
I know, it's like, it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, this is the thing, you know, it's like, people tell me about films, and it's like, well, you know, it's like, I've never seen it, so I wouldn't know where to go with it, really, but...
Is it not intriguing to watch it?
Not really. I've never really been into Brad Pitt, to be quite honest with you. It's like, I think his biggest... I remember his biggest flop, which I believe was Cool World, and I think, you know, looking at that and, you know, the thing that's, you know, he appears in those kind of movies. It's like, you know, I don't know, really. It's like Brad Pitt never really stuck with me very much. But so, unfortunately, I think he's just one of those actors which some people say are great, but for me, he's just been falling by the wayside.
Give him a mess. Okie dokie. That's your film news for this week, and that's all the films for this week. In the next hour, we'll be having a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of John Woo's Stranglehold on the Xbox 360. It's a bit of a retro game for you there. But taking us up to the top of the hour, we've got Two Men and a Drum Machine with "I'm Tired of Getting Pushed Around." This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in the second hour, we'll be starting off with half an hour of video games and then having half an hour of TV. And in that section, we'll look back at Comedy Showcase, Comedy Lab, and The Body Farm. Look ahead to some more programmes coming up and also some TV news. But in this first half hour, we'll be having a look at sort of retro games review, because games are sort of a bit, you know, sometimes it can be a bit sort of few and far between, or there is more coming out now. We're having a review of John Woo's Stranglehold on the Xbox 360. And also some new video games releases and some video games news. So, John Woo's Stranglehold. It's effectively a sequel to his 1992 action movie Hard Boiled. Well, they're starring Chow Yun-fat as Inspector Tequila Yuen, one which I haven't actually seen. Shame on me, I know. Although from the clips I've seen, I can see where it's coming from. Being the first game from Midway to use the Unreal Engine 3, the basic plot of the game is that in Hong Kong, a policeman has gone missing. The kidnappers call and say they want a single office to take a trip to the Kowloon Market. Single officer, rather, to take a trip to the Kowloon Market, that means you, thus leading to a series of levels involving battles with the triads and Russian mafia. There's more to discover as the game takes you to Chicago. I still haven't gone through it all, to be honest. I'm yet led to believe the majority of the game style is the same, but that doesn't mean it's a problem. Quite the opposite, in fact, because as you play this one-man-on-a-mission type of cop, Stranglehold is a big load of crash-bang-wallop, and I absolutely loved it. Taking some elements from films that have followed since Woo's film came out, the Matrix's bullet time style to slow down the passing of important seconds is called Tequila Time here. And as you jump about at the same time, it gives a very similar look to Max Payne, which makes for a wonderful series of games on the PC, Xbox, even the humble Game Boy Advance. And there's like a, I think Max Payne 3 is coming out in early next year, finally. We've been waiting for years for that. If I had any complaints, I'd say that the movement of Takeda is a bit wooden as you run about and he walks right around like he's got cramp. Gliding over tables doesn't make for a smooth transition, especially when you can do it back and forth at will and he just heads back in the same pose, shuffling his bum backwards for the return journey. And you can see, and if you look on my DVD Fever Games YouTube channel, you can see in the first clip in the market when he does that. However, there are many good things happening in this game, and that makes his mobility problems less of an issue. He can perform stylish kills to earn stars to fill the tequila bomb gauge and give a health boost, although you don't have to wait to get a full complement of these to benefit. Emergency replenishment comes from pressing left on the D-pad to convert even a minor amount of tequila bomb energy into some health. I could also whinge that too many baddies are standing next to explosive barrels yet again, but I won't, because since this game does have the get-out clause, which comes when you're in their drugs labs that are full of explosive chemicals anyway that go boom when you fire at them. In fact, as you play, you'll see that much of the environment can be blown apart or shot at to amusing effect. The thing to look out for is to shoot at things with a shiny look to them to cause mayhem, something I only realised after recording some of the clips online, such as one with the standoff. Precision time bullets are really clever in the subsequent graphics that are rendered to pull the shot off. Okay, when you shoot lots of people in or around the eye, they all clutch their heads in pretty much the same way. But it's how it all mixes in together with the surroundings and the camera twists round that makes it realistic and makes you feel like you're playing one of Wu's movies. And for those games worried that they'll have to go a long way before being able to save, don't fret, because there are lots of checkpoints, ammo and health. Now what we need is for the powers that be to make a Clive Barker-based horror game and apply the same game engine. So you can go to the DVD Fever Games YouTube channel and you'll see several pieces of gaming footage from that game. That came out, about 3 years ago, I think. That it's a bit of a retro game, but it's worth a watch. Graphics, 9. Sound, 10 out of 10. Playability, 9. Entertainment, 10. So overall, solid 10 out of 10 for that one. Okay, in a moment we'll be having the top 10 video games charts, and also there's been new releases out this Friday. But first of all, in a moment, we'll have a little bit of music from Robert Plant and Harm's Swift Way. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now in this section we're going to have a look at the top 10 games charts. And we've got number 1, again, we've got Dead Island. Number 2, Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine. Number 3, Resistance 3. Number 4, it's down for Driver San Francisco. And number 5, Deus Ex Human Revolution. Number 6, Zumba Fitness. Number 7, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Number 8, Rugby World Cup 2011. Number 9, Lego Harry Potter Years 1-4. And number 10, Cars 2. There's also a new entry on the PS3 for God of War Collection Volume 2 on that's number 35. There's also re-entries, number 11 from Red Faction Armageddon, number 33 LA Noir, Killzone 3 at 37, Michael Jackson The Experience at 38, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare at number 39. Excuse me. Now, some of the games that are out this Friday. We've got F1 2011, which is a sequel to the BAFTA-winning Formula One video game from Codemasters, the developer and publisher of award-winning racing games. Develops under Codemasters' exclusive worldwide agreement with Formula One World Championship Limited, F1 will come complete with all official drivers, teams and circuits featuring in the 2011 FIA Formula One World Championship. Excuse me. With a new focus on multiplayer gaming, including co-op championships and split-screen mode, F1 2011 will invite players to be the driver, live the life, go compete, with a range of innovations, improvements and enhancements on and off the track. Set to be the most enthralling season yet, the 2011 FIA Formula One World Championship features two new circuits in India and Germany, new drivers, rules, tyres, as Sebastian Vettel seeks to defend his title. Now, also out this Friday, and this is going to be probably the biggest game that's out this Friday. What do you believe? We've got Barbie Jet Set and Style. Ooh, on the Wii and DS. Barbie has just launched, I kid you not, Barbie has just launched a new enterprise, Jet Set and Style Incorporated, a new top fashionista. He'll take all your style and fashion expertise to satisfy a fabulous celebrity clientele. Travel the globe from Los Angeles to Tokyo to Paris, Rio de Janeiro, London, Moscow and more as you tend to the hair, makeup, nails and fashion of one of the world's most glamorous stylists and socialites. Fly aboard the Barbie Jet Salon to gather stylistic inspiration from exciting international locales. Earn fashionista points as your skills grow until finally you're ready for the big show, your opportunity to style Barbie herself in the very own ultra-glam fashion show in Milan. Remember everything you learned and make Barbie truly hair-tastic, as you never know which special leading man might be making an appearance. So never mind. See, Gears of War 3, that's just going to fail now because everyone's going to be buying Barbie instead. Also, we've got Dungeons of Dark Lord, which is a sequel to the much-loved Dungeons, the game where the more evil you are, the better. In Dungeons of Dark Lord, there is a slew of exciting new features, including four-player multiplayer in three modes. Along with the addition of multiplayer modes such as Deathmatch and King of the Hill, there's now the ability to play as some of the game's popular bosses, Minos, the Dungeon Lord, the Zombie King and more in multiplayer, along with the addition of an extensive single-player campaign, a new dungeon setting and approximately 25 unique prestige gimmicks. This features three new multiplayer modes for up to four players, Deathmatch, King of the Hill and Survival, entirely new, fully scripted and voice single-player campaign, a new dungeon setting, an ice crystal cave, with new graphics, unique prestige gimmicks, and a new monster. Playable bosses in multiplayer modes, as I mentioned before. Various dungeon graphic sets and inventories are now available. And there's also a new set of skills, especially for multiplayer modes. And also, finally out this week, we've got Supremacy MMA. And the only rule of Supremacy MMA is that there are no rules. This is on the Xbox 360 and PS3, by the way. Oh, and Dungeons of Dark Lord was on PC. Dive into the gritty underworld of the unauthorized underground MMA fighting. Supremacy MMA brings the brutality of unsanctioned, unlicensed MMA fighting to your console with fast and furious gameplay and underground aesthetics. The game aims to raise the bar in the MMA space by bringing an unprecedented level of fast, fluid combat, intuitive controls, and true to the sport brutality. Choose a fight style and claw your way from obscurity to supremacy. Okay, so that's your new releases out this Friday in the top 10 games charts. And in a moment we'll have a look at some video games news. But first of all, in a moment we're having a bit of music from Kasabian and Fires. It's 106.6.
106.6.
And in this section, we have a look at some video games news. And the PlayStation Vita is to be region-free, says Sony. Shusei Yoshida, president of Worldwide Studios, broke the news when responding to a fan question on his personal Twitter page. Vita is scheduled for release in Japan in December, priced at £250 for the 3G model or £205 for Wi-Fi only. Customers in other territories will be able to import the device and encounter no software compatibility issues. Sony announced the full list of games in development for the platform at the Tokyo Game Show 2011 and revealed it will feature an external battery pack to extend its standard 3 to 5 hour usage. Final Fantasy X and Metal Gear Solid HD Collection were among the blockbuster titles confirmed for Vita at the Tokyo Expo. The PlayStation Vita debuts in Japan on December 17th. We've also got the news that Nintendo 3DS November system update will add 3D video recording. With 3D video recording, users will be able to record video footage using the 3DS outer camera and view the videos in glasses-free 3D. People will be able to record and view moments from birthday parties, soccer games and holiday events, or create their own original 3D productions and show them to others in 3D, all without the need for special glasses, read a statement issued by Nintendo. The November system update will also provide new experiences for people who have conquered all the Street Pass challenges in Street Pass Me Pete Plaza, quote unquote. During Nintendo's pre-Tokyo Game Show press conference, President Satoru Iwata hinted that the new Street Pass minigames will be added, but no details were given. And Nintendo also added their release date and price for the 3DS pad, slide pad in Japan, and also revealed the new misty pink 3DS colour. I've also got the news that PlayStation Network new terms and conditions will stop class action lawsuits against Sony. All new members must agree to updated terms before continuing to use a service. Under the new section, Binding Individual Arbitration, the document states, any dispute resolution proceedings, whether in arbitration or court, will be conducted only on an individual basis and not in a class or representative action, or as a named or unnamed member in a class, consolidated, representative or private attorney general legal action. It continues, unless both you and the Sony entity with which you have a dispute specifically agree to do so in writing following initiation of the arbitration. The terms which Sony posted on their website as a PDF file say that this does not affect class action lawsuits filed on or before August 20th this year. And the PlayStation Network has suffered a security breach in April, which led to personal details and credit card information being stolen. And as a result, people were attempting to file class action lawsuits against Sony. So, obviously trying to put a stop to that. Xbox Live TV on course for 2011, says Microsoft. The CEO, Steve Ballmer, told attendees at the Build Developers Conference that the service is in the planning stages, but remains on schedule for a 2011 launch. The executive added that Microsoft is working with dozens or hundreds of additional video content suppliers, so the TV market can strengthen existing Xbox Live services such as ESPN, Hulu and Netflix. Ballmer said, having all that content on... I mean, all of that content is right on. It's right on. It's still in the 80s. It says it's fantastic, but it brings a new challenge with it. Certainly, we all know the frustrations of using guides and menus and controllers, and we think a better way to do this is simply to bring Bing and voice to the Xbox. You say Xbox finds it. And I prefer typing stuff in a search engine, and I always use Google anyway. Who uses Bing? Anyway, Microsoft was rumoured to be showcasing the television platform at this summer's E3 Expo in conjunction with Diamond TV. As the demonstration did not take place, Diamond's involvement remains uncertain. The company is releasing another Xbox Live dashboard update later this year, but there's been no word yet on whether a television service will be part of it. Okay, so that's your video games news for this week and all to do with video games. We have some TV stuff in a moment, starting with some programmes watched in the past week, including Doctor Who and Comedy Lab and Comedy Showcase. See if they're any better this time round. We'll see. First of all, a bit of music from Yes, an Owner of a Lonely Heart. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, this section, having a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, starting with Doctor Who, which was called The God Complex. And TARDIS lands in a hotel where every visitor's room contains their deepest, darkest fears. But what lies in wait in the Doctor's room? Before the credits, we saw policewoman Lucy Hayward, who said that you never know what's going to be in your room, and when you find out, you realise it could never be anything else. Now, the Doctor, Amy, etc. meet four people in the hotel who have yet to discover their fears. But when it comes to Amy's room, they see the Weeping Angels. But they can't kill anyone because, as the Doctor finds out, they're not real. There was also a Minotaur running around the hotel who would attack whoever praised it enough. And to constantly say praise him was like an addiction. And it gave him a feeling of being blessed and that it was okay to face the beast, as if they didn't realise it was going to kill them. And we also had David Walliams as a weird-looking alien, who was also another hotel resident. Annoyingly, at one point, the Doctor found his room, looked inside, without showing us, and he just said, oh, of course, it's you. Well, who? Why? Just Stephen Moffat. Get it together. In the end, in Amy's room, it was actually... Because before we thought it was Amy's room, it turned out it wasn't. But in Amy's actual room, it was actually herself as a child. Again. Why does she keep turning up? Has Moffat not got any new ideas? The Doctor told her to forget her faith in him and that he robbed her of her childhood and that she shouldn't have waited for him all those years. He told her it's time to stop waiting, and with that and a few lightning shocks, the Minotaur was dead. And so it plodded on till the end. Although the last 5 minutes were good, as the Doctor had dropped Amy and Rory off at the house with Rory's perfect car outside and then disappeared into the TARDIS. But will that be the end for Amy and Rory? I doubt it, as it's not even the series finale. Oh dear, Stephen Moffat, where did it all go wrong after you took over? Well, from Amy's choice, actually, about halfway through the last series, because the other ones before that were all fine. So, we'll see what comes out this coming Saturday. Well, we'll mention that in a moment anyway. There'll be also a Comedy Showcase, Fun Police, on Channel 4. Now, Fun Police is a larger-than-life studio sitcom that follows the trials and tribulations of a less-than-competent health and safety team. Neil returns to work after falling two stories onto the head of Bright Seas Health and Safety Department, leaving her in a coma. With the boss currently hospitalised, a new boss, Leslie, steps up with great enthusiasm, but he has some questionable management skills. Wes practically lost me at the start. He's got Jack Doolan, Rhys Darby and Vic Reeves. And it lost me because once the first supposedly humorous line from Rhys Darby came out, it was followed by canned laughter. As for the rest of it, it's difficult to know where to begin. Every last line of dialogue was followed by canned laughter. In fact, between every line of dialogue, well, there was canned laughter. And the rest of it was like some kind of bad 1990s sitcom with overacting and brightly coloured suits, especially in Rhys Darby's case. And nothing improved when Vic Reeves turned up. I had to bail at the interval, I'm afraid. I just couldn't stick around for the rest. After that, we had Comedy Lab, Rick and Peter on E4. Now, Rick Edwards and Peter Mitchell deliver a satirical take on the self-important, pumped-up world of TV presenting as caricatures of themselves. An odd couple thrown together after Rick makes a regrettable gag on T4, he's put on a crash course in how to be more politically correct. Now, it started bad for Rick when he's invited in by Stu Carter, the head of youth programming, played by Miles Jupp, for a telling off about a fact he posted an insulting video on YouTube. When he points out he'd like to make documentaries for his production company, he's told that the only thing that he might get is to do some coverage for next year's Paralympics and spend some time shadowing disabled actor Peter Mitchell. In a scene a few minutes later, he's in a fast food place with his mate Sheriff Joe Wilkinson, who in turn goes around with his pug dog, Monster. Rick ordered food for his two guests, Nicholas Parsons and Giles Corran, who he invited along to talk about a show. However, Giles couldn't make it, and Nicholas arrived late. He hadn't got time to talk, so put all the food that they'd bought for him into a plastic bag, and then left, only to eat it in his car outside, and with Giles Corran. It was a reasonably interesting idea, but it just didn't seem to have any sense of progression, and I'm not sure it could sustain a whole series. Also, last Tuesday we had The Body Farm, which is a crime drama series where Eve Lockhart runs forensic research facility The Body Farm, studying the complex journey the body goes through as it decays. Eve and a team of scientists quickly discover that dealing with victims of crime is a lot messier than any of them ever expect when they encounter human remains splattered all over the walls of a small flat. Now, starring Tara Fitzgerald and Keith Allen, I never got into Waking the Dead, of which this is a spin-off, as Waking looked a bit pompous, but this series did look intriguing. And The Body Farm is so cool because it's the point at which they start to decay and they do all kinds of tests on them to find out more about the cause of death. In the first episode, they found some entrails all over the walls, floor and ceiling in one place, with flesh flies doing their thing to make the place all smelly and gross. I hope you're not eating your lunch while you're listening to this. One of the team, Oggy, uses his own skin for live tissue cross-contamination tests, leaving him with lesions all over his arms. We know he's odd because he hasn't left the body farm in over 6 months. Now, it turned out that the dead bodies in the room were naked bomb makers who died a month earlier when the compression built up and backfired on them. They managed to identify the bodies rather unrealistically quickly, and there's also the additional speculation on just how the men died, as it may not have been in the explosion. They also need to work out how it ties in together with the girl who slashed her wrists in the bath. And once they do tie it in all together and work out who is the culprit behind it all, then have to tie him down forensically. Now, if I've had any complaints, it's just like TV DNA Forensics and Coppers. All the characters involved in wrongdoings give their confessions with no recording devices in place. They just seem happy to spill the beans, irrespective of all that. I liked it, but it was a bit slow-moving, with some clichéd acting at times. Also, I didn't realise at first that Nathan was played by Frank Gallagher's youngest kid in Shameless, Luke Tittinsor. This looks a lot different now because he's about twice the height. Keith Allen and Tara Fitzgerald, they do work well together and they have good chemistry. And overall, I did enjoy it. It's something I'll be tuning into the next episode for sure. So the next episode on that is on tonight on BBC One at 9 p.m. Okay, in a moment we'll have a look at some TV shows coming up in the next week. First of all, we'll have a bit of music, and it's the Thompson Twins, and You Take Me Up. This is 106.6.
106.6.
I'm just going to have a quick look at some programmes coming up in the next week. Now, oddly, there's no new episodes of Comedy Showcase nor Comedy Lab on the horizon, even though both series have only had 3 episodes so far, and they should be having 6 each. For Comedy Showcase, we're still due to get Kabadasses, written by newcomer Nikesh Shukla. Mr. and Mrs. Hot Show, starring Ben Clark, Matthew Crosby and Thomas Parry, and The Warm-Up Guy, starring up-and-coming comic Tom Davis. I emailed Channel 4 and got the bizarre reply that neither series are necessarily weekly series, sometimes they're monthly. But I know this is a load of old rubbish, as they've always been weekly before, even daily in the case of one series of Comedy Lab, when it was on Channel 4. They did, however, confirm both will return in October with more episodes. It does make me wonder if they got dumped for a while because of poor ratings, perhaps. We've also got another episode of Doctor Who, which is called Closing Time. That's on Saturday at 7:10. It says, the Doctor's final days are upon him, but when he drops in on an old friend, the Cybermen are waiting. Well, the old friend is James Corden, and last year his was one of the worst episodes shown, so I'm not holding out much hope for this one. I think the series is nearly over. We've got, probably 1 or 2 more episodes after that one to watch. I've also got Fresh Meat, which is on Channel 4 tomorrow at 10 o'clock. This is a brand new 8-part comedy drama series about the hilarious and painful truths of being a student. Shipping up as freshers at their shared house are JP, a public school boy with good teeth and an inflated sense of entitlement, Kingsley, charming and crushingly insecure, Josie, determined to experience new things, socially awkward know-it-all Howard, hard-living Vod, and Oregon, desperate to be cool and terrified of being boring. One by one, the 6 new students destined to be housemates congregate before term begins, although second year Howard has, of course, already been in solitary residence for some unspecified time. Stars Joe Thomas, Jack Whitehall, Kimberly Nixon, Greg McHugh, Zora Ashton and Charlotte Ritchie. The trailer just showed several naked people in a sardine tan, but we'll see whether it's the new young ones or perhaps not. I've also got Educating Essex. Your school days, love them or loathe them, you never forget them. But what is life really like for today's generation of students and teachers? This major series has unprecedented access to an English secondary school to follow a group of GCSE students and the staff who teach them as they face their most important year in their education. Passmore School in Harlow, Essex, is a successful school in a challenging area. Under head teacher Vic Goddard, it's been awarded academy status and is rated outstanding by Ofsted. Now, the school has been rigged with 65 fixed cameras from the corridors to the canteen and from the headmaster's office to the detention hall to reveal every detail of daily life. So that's Educating Essex. That's out on Channel 4 on Thursday at 9 o'clock. Remember, we're having some TV news, but first of all, a bit of music. We're going to go west, I think, and we close our eyes. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And we finish this hour with some TV news. Starting off with the news that Red or Black could get a second series, says ITV chief Adam Crozier. Shown early this month, the programme offered 7 contestants the chance to win £1 million each night. However, despite 4 players winning the top prize, ratings for the series dipped as low as 3.8 million throughout the week. In fact, it even got beaten by Watchdog on one night. However, Broadcast reports that Adam Crozier has told the RTS Cambridge convention that Red or Black would undergo changes if it's to return for a second run. Defending the programme, he pointed out it had attracted more viewers than the first episodes of either X Factor or Britain's Got Talent. He stated that it had delivered a fantastically young and valuable advertising audience, and he insisted that it had been a smash online where viewers were invited to play alone. It really caught the imagination, he said. Well, it certainly caught the headlines. He added, there are some things we would do differently, ways you could change the programme, but there are some long-term brands you have to invest in. Asked to confirm a recommission, he said that it would have to be a question for Peter Fincham, the broadcaster's director of TV channels and online. Also, there's the news that Curb Your Enthusiasm will run for 2 more seasons, says JB Smoove. Smoove, who plays Leon in Curb Your Enthusiasm, suggested creator Larry David isn't content after the final episode that was shown recently, Larry versus Michael J. Fox, wrapped up season 8. I think Larry's going to do 2 more seasons, that's my gauge. He's going to make it an even 100 episodes. 100 always looks good in a box. Smoove was also questioned on whether if he gives David any dating advice, prompting him to reply. Truth be told, I think Larry is a bit of a playboy on the side. I think Larry has a swagger that nobody knows about. He's got to have a little swagger when you're rich and loaded like that. You've got to have a swagger. The same swagger it takes to do business is the same swagger it takes to get a piece of the ladies. You understand what I'm trying to tell you? I don't know what he's talking about. So David was recently rumoured to be dating Curb Your Enthusiasm guest star Amy Landecker, who was apparently married when they began seeing each other. And Larry David also admitted he finds the show's production schedule draining. I've also got the news. Peter Kay has revealed some Phoenix Nights movie plans. He's already said he's written the script for a film adaptation of the popular Channel 4 sitcom, and revealed that he's been approached by producers, apparently spurred on by the success of the Inbetweeners movie. It's written, I've written it, it's done. They've even asked me with this Inbetweeners film if you want to make a film of it, he declared. However, Kay conceded that assembling the cast for the project would be hard, saying, the biggest problem is getting everyone together. Regarding his script, the star insisted that it would live up to any potential hype, adding, this is funny, the fact that we've got Brian Potter in a wheelchair and he's in a garage and a truck pulls up and he's accidentally gets caught in the grill and he goes about 400 miles on the front of a truck up the motorway. Meanwhile, Kay also disclosed that scripts for two Christmas specials of Phoenix Nights spin-off Max and Paddy's Road to Nowhere have been written. He said, the funny thing is that we wrote two Max and Paddy's. Me and Paddy McGuinness wrote two Christmas specials that could be full-length films, but then we just started doing other things. Well, would he be able to get the other Phoenix Nights writers, Dave Spikin, Neil Fitzmaurice, to commit to the project after he reportedly and understandably annoyed them both by calling it Peter Kay's Phoenix Nights and all subsequent repeats and on the DVDs? And while I'd enjoy a movie, I think it's all about 10 years too late. And Max and Paddy was okay early on, but then they just fell apart halfway through, I thought. Also, we got the news that Rupert Everett, Lindsay Duncan, both star in Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror, a Channel 4 drama anthology described as a hybrid of The Twilight Zone and Tales of the Unexpected, will focus on the way that technology has changed people's lives. Brooker will write the first two installments of the three-part run, while the final episode will be scripted by Peep Show co-creator Jesse Armstrong. Casino Royale's Rory Kinnear and Rome's Lindsay Duncan will star in the premiere episode, The National Anthem, in which the modern information age creates a huge dilemma for the Prime Minister. The second episode, 15 Million Merits, starring Julia Davis, Rupert Everett, Daniel Kaluuya and Jessica Brown Finley, will satirise entertainment shows. The hour-long instalment will portray a future world in which the only way to escape a life of physical labour is to impress the judges on the Hot Shot talent show. Armstrong's contribution, which bears the working title of In Memoriam, is set in an alternate reality where all human actions are recorded on a computer system, granting everyone on Earth the power of perfect recall. Black Mirror has been produced by Zeppatron and is expected to air in late 2011. Okay, so that's all your TV news for this week, and everything on the DVD Fever show. So as I say, if you go to facebook.com/DVD Fever show, you'll be able to see all the trailers for everything, well, all the films and everything that you've heard on the show today. And in a moment at 2 o'clock, we've got the Aaron Mehta show coming up. But first of all, to take us up to the top of the hour, we're going to be having a bit of music from Devo and Whip It. This is 106.6.
106.6.